Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us in the studio today for the first half of the show are Kelsey York and Sarah Beth Ross, and they are the water quality technicians that run the Harmful Algal Bloom Program for the state of Utah. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having us.
So we're going to start with this as the baseline for our conversation. What exactly is a harmful algal bloom?
So,
or HAB, as people in the know call it, I'm learning, right?
Yeah. We just usually call it a HAB because it's, frankly, it's easier to say, and we say it a lot.
Yeah.
It's actually a cyanobacteria. So it's a cyanobacteria that looks like an algae, and it's everywhere from the coast to inland to Lake Erie, the Great Lakes in Utah, right here in Utah. And it's a cyanobacteria that when it dies, it releases a toxin that is potentially harmful to humans, pets, and pretty much anything in the water column that's living. And the conditions that it like particularly flourishes under are high nutrient loads from grazing or agriculture or excess phosphorus, nitrogen, any sort of excess nutrient, as well as high temperatures like we like to have here in Utah, as well as a sort of stagnation of the water column, which where we get like no mixing. So no wind, no current mixing. And it's really under those three conditions that these blooms kind of dominate the ecosystem because it's naturally occurring in pretty much every water body. But that's the three conditions that it dominates. And then when it dies, that's when the toxins come out and that's when we become concerned about it.
So that's what I find interesting is that algae, I always learned that thought that algae was a plant.
Yes.
But in this case, you used the term cyanobacteria. So am I misunderstanding the difference between what algae is? Is it algae a plant or is it a single cell bacteria? Or can you kind of parse that out?
So
it seems complicated.
It is.
It's a little complicated.
It's a little
algae
complicated.
Algae is a complicated thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like the harmful algal bloom, where we get that from is like when it started out in the ocean as like the red tide, like that was algae. Here in Utah, though, it's actually cyanobacteria.
Right.
But the harmful algal name just kind of stuck. so that's what we call it. But technically, here in Utah, it's not an algae. It looks like it, though.
Oh, okay. So it looks so like if it. You were to see it, you say, well, that looks like an algae. That's a mat of
what
algae.
What we think of as algae.
Yeah, greenish, what you would think of as algae.
Greenish material.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. So, yeah, what does it look like visually?
There's a lot of different ways it looks like. And for you can see pictures on our website. It's habs.utah.gov. But we have some that looks like someone literally just mowed their lawn and then dumped the grass clippings in the lake. So you're going to see like long, like little strings that look like grass clippings. There's some that come in clumps. There's some that are like small spherical nodules in the water column as well. So if you want to see what they look like, I would check out our website because there's actually a lot of different
and
types.
The cyano part is actually the reflect the color.
The
blue.
Color.
Yeah.
Not
yep, the
that
blue
it's
green.
Cyanide. That was another thing.
Yeah.
It had a relationship to cyanide.
Yeah.
Because it's a toxin.
Yeah.
Like you say, the bacteria releases a toxin upon death, and that's a poison.
Yes.
Yeah.
To animals and wildlife.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the harmful aspect.
Yeah. That's the harmful aspect. It gets its cyanobacteria from its cyan green color.
And okay.
Because that's the one nice thing about it is it's lime green. So usually if you see it, you see a lime green algae or algae-looking thing,
yeah.
You kind of, your senses go, maybe I shouldn't go in that,
yeah.
You know?
Not today.
So this is something we've been hearing more and more about, I think, in the past few years, or it's certainly something that we've been covering more in the past few years. How long has this like monitoring program been going on in this state? And is it a more of a recent priority?
Yeah. So this, like you mentioned, it's been happening all over the states. I think this is the first time that we're kind of putting an emphasis on it. This program is actually very new. It's only the second year that the state has been consistently monitoring the HABS program. And so from that, it's kind of hard to see trends, right? Because it seems like we're seeing more. But we also are monitoring a lot more.
Right.
We go to over roughly 60 sites or 60 water bodies across the entire state. And so when you go to that many places, you're going to see it. We also get sort of reports from different citizens, from different entities, local health departments when they're concerned. So our kind of our breadth of water bodies is only growing. So, but back to your point, it's a new thing that we're monitoring. So it seems like it's a really big deal right now, but that's just because we're on alert for it.
We're just starting to learn about it. I think there were some pretty like high profile incidents where you'd hear about like a pet getting really sick or things like that. And I think maybe that's what's brought it to be kind of like in the public eye.
I mean, just in the last couple of weeks, those three dogs that passed away, an occasion back east, southeast, the one dog jumped into the pond. Mm-hmm. And then came out and just got water, cyanobacteria, concentrated water on the other two, and they all passed away within hours. Wow. It's that powerful of a poison.
Yeah, and it's tricky because there's different strains. You know, there's different types of cyanobacteria, and some cyanobacteria types doesn't need that high of cell counts per volume of water in order to be toxic, but some need a lot, you know? So when that's where you, like you mentioned, it's a new program, we're just learning about this stuff. And yeah, that was a devastating incident. And that's why we want to be out there monitoring it as much as we can.
And now there are lakes and ponds and mostly urban, semi-suburban settings that are closed to recreation and to dogs and other animals in general.
Yeah.
So when you're going around the state, how many bodies of water did you say you were monitoring?
Upwards of 60 water bodies.
Okay, so tell us about how you do a typical monitoring. You go arrive at a site.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
We'll arrive at a site and we take a visual assessment first. Typically, like we said, the cyanobacteria you can see pretty clearly. And then we have a tool called a phycocyanin reader. What that does is you take a sample of the water and it has like a little probe with a light on it, and it gives us a sense of how much blue-green algae is in there. Mm. And that's just like gives us an idea. Sometimes like if you have small spherical nodules that aren't as lime green, that phycocyanin can help you get an idea of what's actually in the water column. So we use one of those, and dependent on the number that we get on there and how much we're seeing in the water, we will collect samples from the water body, and we take those to the Utah Public Health Lab to get tested for toxins. The cyanobacteria is natural, and it's in most water bodies, but when it reaches a certain level and when it starts dying off, that's when it becomes a concern. And so we'll grab those samples out just along the shore typically, or we'll go out in waders farther out if that's where it's at, and just collect some water, stir it up a little bit to get a good idea, and then collect them in three types of bottles to test for different toxins. So.
I was going to ask, do you have to worry about like your own health and safety when you're collecting in some of these places?
Yeah, so we have waders that we wear, and then we have gloves that go like up to our shoulders. Attractive look.
Yeah, for sure.
Respirator, because there's respiratory issues associated with this.
There's been talk of us wearing a respirator. We haven't quite instigated that policy yet, but
that's something to be
concerned. It is a concern. Yeah, it is for sure a concern.
Yep.
So body of water, I mean, this is typically going to be lakes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Is there a certain part of the lake you're looking for? It could be, lakes can be large. So are you kind of zeroing or trying to target certain areas of the lake that might be better habitats of this?
Yeah, so we
bloom than others.
We typically have multiple sites along each shore.
Yeah.
And then we try to target high recreation areas. So places where people are going to be getting in the water or pets. So usually like around the boat dock or around the beaches is where we typically target, just because we know that's where people are going to actually be in the water.
Yeah, and when we get to a water body, we sample at the spot that we see the highest amount of cyanobacteria present. So we'll usually we'll do a scoping. We'll see, we'll go to all of our sites. Like Sarah mentioned, we go to sites that people access the water. And sometimes that means that we go out into the open water. Like on Utah Lake, we usually go out into the open water because a lot of people are on that reservoir or lake. That one's actually a lake. people are actually on that lake in water skiing and everything. So we really need to get a bigger picture of that. But we go where people are recreating, and the important thing to remember is that these things are driven by wind as well as currents. Right, so we kind of look at wind direction. We try and target our approach and our sampling strategy in order to get the highest amount of cyanobacteria and collect that sample so we can get a reasonable maximum amount of cyanobacteria for a water body that we sample.
And so that's interesting, and in that you're looking for a maximum. You're not looking for an average, because probably the maximums are where you really need to be concerned, right?
Yeah, and I should also mention that every time we take a targeted sample, we also take a water column sample, and that's so that we get sort of the full picture. So we get the surface or the targeted clumps, sometimes where it concentrates in the surface scum.
Right.
Yeah. And then we also, like Sarah mentioned, we walk out into the middle or to knee depth in the water body, and we get an elbow depth and try and get up through that water column in order to get a better idea of what's happening, yeah, in the whole reservoir. So what is the baseline that people could be sort of people could be exposed to, and then what's the worst? Like, if a dog were to lick that, like, what would be the worst, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we take both.
In order to, yeah, not to scare people, but to show people that the potential is there.
Right,
sure.
If you were to jump in, this is what you'd be encountering.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So are there certain parts of the state that are seeing a lot more of this than others? Is it more prevalent in the South where it's warmer?
It's currently,
everybody's doing it.
It's everywhere.
Okay.
Like, on our website, we have a list of all the lakes that are under advisory. And so you can check that out just to look and see where it's safe to go.
And the website again?
The habs.utah.gov.
Okay.
Yep. And I think just there on the left-hand side, it says, like, something about, like, which lakes are on advisory. And so you can check that out. But we have lakes on advisory all over the state. We have lakes in Vernal, Mount Warner, that's under advisory, in Manaway, which is in Logan, and then as far south as Otter Creek, which is in Fish Lake National Forest. So,
and like you were saying, that but some parts of the lake can be more impacted than others because of the downwind nature or so of the mats. And also, you talked about going to beaches or areas that are being used, the marinas and others, because they can be the sources of high nutrient loadings, homes, septic tanks, inlets, stream or river inlets that are immediately downstream from grazing operations, because we know cow and cattle can be the great source of nitrogen and phosphorus, those nutrients you talk about, from their liquid and solid waste that gets introduced into those water bodies. So you're looking at all that big picture. But again, a 400 or 500 acre lake, you know, it could be 10 or 15 acres in the southern end of it, or the downwind end of it, that can be the most impacted. But the advisory just goes out for the whole lake.
Yeah, unless it's a really big water body.
Okay.
Like Utah Lake. Like Utah Lake.
Utah Lake, does it matter where you go in Utah Lake?
Yeah.
I don't think
I'm allowed to say that. But
we can.
Yeah.
Because we've had lots of conversations about
totally.
Utah Lake.
Yeah.
And that lake is just highly impacted.
Yeah,
by algae throughout the summer because of its stagnated
nature. Well, and other
nature.
Pollutants.
And other pollutants. Yeah, exactly. A lot of runoff from
waste
local farming and wastewater. And they all contribute to that. Utah Lake suffers.
Yeah.
And it's shallow nature.
It's shallow,
so it's
a
very warm lake.
It's very easy for it to warm up. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like a triple
play. It's like the perfect, perfect trifecta there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So.
So if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Sarah Beth Ross and Kelsey York, and they're the water quality technicians with the state of Utah that run the Harmful Algal Bloom program, also called the HAB program for short. So we'll stick with that for ease of talking about it. So we've had some issues here locally with harmful algal blooms. We've talked about it in a few of our local reservoirs. I think Rockport and also Deer Creek in recent years. Are those areas where you guys were sampling?
Yes. Those are definitely on our radar for sampling. I think Sarah might have mentioned before, but our reservoirs of interest are high recreation reservoirs, which is Rockport for sure, and Deer Creek, as well as drinking water sources, which I believe Deer Creek is also a drinking water source, as well as areas that we've seen blooms in the past. And so as that list of blooms that we've seen in the past grows, so does our site list. But yes, we monitor those on a monthly basis until we see a bloom at a particular water body, and then we'll go back there on a weekly basis in order to monitor to see whether it's getting worse or getting better. And we go there on a weekly basis until we get 2 weeks that are clean of toxins or high cell counts.
Okay. And during this process, yeah, I imagine you're working with like the local municipalities, the health departments.
It's a very cooperative effort. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah. So we don't have the power to put the advisories up. We collect the data and we take the data to the lab and they give us our results, and then we recommend to the local health departments that based on our thresholds, we would recommend that perhaps you might put a warning sign.
So it's up to them
to
take that information and then decide to post a warning or something or other. Not you.
Yeah.
You're
not
the scientist.
Yeah.
You just provide the data.
Yeah, the data for it.
They make the call.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just two of you running around the state, driving around the state.
It's a lot of driving.
It's a lot of driving. And we, of course, back in our office, we have some key players as well who help us pick site lists and prioritize as well. But yeah, as far as the grunt work,
that's us.
That's us. You met us.
Yep, going all over the state. And like she mentioned, when a lake has an algal bloom, we go back every week.
Yeah.
So in the late summer, like right now, we have a lot of lakes that have algal blooms that we are trying to get to every week. And so our schedule right now is pretty hectic.
A little crazy.
We're going all over the state right now.
After the show, you're hopping in the car and driving to St. George.
We are headed to St. George today. Yes.
What's down there?
There's three reservoirs of concern. Gunlock, Sand Hollow, and Quail Creek Reservoir. We haven't seen a bloom on them yet, but they're just really high recreation reservoirs. And we're going to do some coordination with the local health departments down there to see if perhaps they can sample while we're tied up in Richfield and Vernal.
Citizens, scientists, can they offer any assistance to you?
Yeah, totally. On our website, we have... a hotline that you can call, 24-hour hotline, which the number is 801-536-4123.
Okay.
And you can report a bloom, and that'll ultimately get to us. We'll go check it out. As well as there's an app. It's called Bloom Watch, and you can download it on your phone. And it kind of takes you through how we think about sampling a bloom. And so it'll get you GPS coordinates, it'll get you pictures, it'll really give us the best idea of what you're seeing so that we can visually identify from what you're seeing, as well as if it's a concern, we'll go down and check it out.
So are there differences? We've been focusing on cyanobacteria, algal blooms, but there's other types of algae too.
Yes.
Some less harmful than others. So the citizen that goes out there and sees an algal bloom, we'll take a photo of it and post it, and then, but you can be able to look, perhaps visually determine whether that's one type of algae or another, correct?
Exactly. So we can usually determine by a photo, but also on our website, again, habs.utah.gov, we have photos on there. And so you can see the difference, because there's filamentous algae, and that's kind of algae that kind of sits on the surface. A lot of times people might think that's dangerous, but it's completely okay.
Okay.
And so there's kind of like side-by-sides on our website, so you can see like what like actual cyanobacteria looks like compared to what non-harmful algae looks like. So that should give you an idea. And so that's better to determine like if a lake is safe to enter or not.
So let's kind of wrap up by talking a little bit about like maybe safety and best practices. So we can look at your map on your website to see, you know, how the monitoring is looking. We can see what any of the advisories are. We can learn about like what appears to be like harmful.
It's very visual.
And then if you see something that you think maybe is, you know, cyanobacteria, what are best practices? What should you do? Like, is this the kind of thing where, like, as long as your dog isn't drinking it, it's fine? You know, like, how do you make those judgments?
So, I mean, if you're really worried about it, I would just stay out of the water. I wouldn't let your dog drink it or get in it.
Or even get swim in it.
Or even swim. I wouldn't let you swim in it. Yeah, exactly.
If you're not going to swim in it.
If you're concerned about it, that's you know, the best thing that you can do. Of course, like I mentioned earlier, it depends on the type of cyanobacteria, whether it's like how toxic it is. So if you want to perhaps get in and swim, that's fine. But just make sure that you're showering, you're rinsing everything off. Make sure that you're rinsing your pets off. Make sure that nobody's ingesting the water. And that's, I would stay out. But if you really want to go in, make sure that you shower. Yeah.
So is it when I develop a rash, or am I going to get nauseous? Like what are the symptoms of it? Or
all
my
of
pet?
The above, yeah.
Yeah, D, all
so
the above.
Yeah. All it's that nasty.
So again, it depends on the cyanobacteria as to which toxin it's going to release. But their liver as well as nerve toxins. So they can give you anything from a rash to blisters on your skin, as well as like you can experience stuff like perhaps an allergic reaction or even vomiting and diarrhea. So it's the whole suite. And
right.
So if you have some mysterious symptoms after yeah. swimming in a green colored lake.
Is that, yeah. and then do I see emergency room? I see a doctor? I mean.
So there's a poison control line that's okay. also posted on our website, but that number is 800-222-1222. And you can call them and they okay. should be able to give you more information.
Right. Fantastic. Well, we have to wrap up, but one more time, the website where we can find all this information
is habs.utah.gov.
Well, that's Kelsey York and Sarah Beth Ross, water quality technicians running the state's harmful algal bloom program. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.